Hey, it's Brother One.
And Brother Two.
From Two Brothers Mattress.
You'll spend 33% of this year on your mattress.
That's almost 3,000 hours.
Start sleeping comfortably on a new Serta mattress.
Visit one of our five stores or twobrothersmattress.com.
With our lowest price guarantee
and our 100-night trial,
your locally owned Two Brothers Mattress is your number one choice in Serta mattresses. Visit one of our five stores or twobrothersmattress.com.
Twobrothersmattress.com.
Radio check.
Loud and clear.
KSL Sports and KSL Podcast present Mode Push, an American view of F1, starting now.
One step. He's Ricky Cut with his Odyssey.
I'm gutted. I'm absolutely gutted.
I enjoyed this so much. Thank you.
Welcome in, everybody. It's another edition of Mode Push, an American view of F1. It's our F1 podcast where we talk about everything F1. Reflected off of the giant American pool of fans that we have now become of F1. And the American GP, of course, last weekend reminded us that this is a big deal, man, in the United States now. It is Dan Jimenez across the ether from me, Alex Keery. Thanks for being with us on the show. Dan, what's up, man? How was we missed you last week, dude.
Yeah, I took a little time off and absconded to Mexico for a little bit with the family and enjoyed watching the race on my phone next to a pool with piña colada, and it was pretty great. Awesome race.
F1 is also absconding to Mexico this week, and we'll get into the Mexican GP and I'm trying to really look at this season and you know, last time we chatted, Max was had already been crowned champion. And I just look back at this year and I go, this has been a really, like, and maybe it was because the last handful of races, I'm trying to figure out when it started too. I don't know when it started, but the rest of the field that is not Max Verstappen seems to have just been an absolute crazy race and a fun, like, season. Other than Max dominating everything. I mean, like, it's weird that in a season that you have a guy who is going to likely break his own record for the most wins in a season, ends up also being one of these years that it is one of the more closely contested everything else after that. I think overall, so far this season has been absolutely amazing. And after the American GP and after eliminating a couple of disqualifications, which you don't see very often, and certainly 4 hours after the race you don't see very often, but everybody gets moved up. Williams gets their first double points. I mean, it's an awesome thing to be able to see Logan Sargeant with that one singular point. So many storylines from this this race last week, but what were your impressions of the USGP in Austin last weekend?
Yeah, I thought it was a super entertaining race with Max starting in fifth or sixth. It was sixth where he started. And he got to fifth by the first lap. But, you know, he had an issue in qualifying where he on the second to last turn, he went out of bounds. He went over the line. And so they deleted his lap. And so his one banked lap from Q3 was only good enough for sixth. So that going into the race, I think created an exciting element to see, like, he obviously dominated the sprint, but it was like, okay, is he going to be able to get up through the field? And he did, I think by like lap 30, he got up there, but it was still like, an interesting race in terms of tire strategy and who was going to go long, who's going to do a one stopper. You know, it was, Lewis was coming through the field really quickly there towards the end. And, if he had another lap or two at it, I think he would have gotten Max. Like, Max was having brake issues at the end, was screaming at GP on the radio to stop talking during the braking zone. And, you know, you could tell, like, Max was like, he was a bit kind of with his feathers ruffled and knew that those guys were right on top of him. And man, it just would have been awesome, I think, if Lewis would have nipped him there at the end. But I think all in all, like, the field is getting a lot closer. And yeah, the Lewis and Charles got that the penalty that disqualified him. But I don't think that had a substantial impact on, like, the overall performance. So I still think that the competition is pulling together.
Can you explain a little bit about that skid plate wear and some of the regulations, in the sense that what was crazy to me was, and again, I feel like everything, there are a handful of things within this sport that I'm still like, I'm really new at this still, because after the race and this comes down and they have these sporting regulations and they have these rules and they have all this stuff. And, you know, it was a lot to explain something that to me felt like, oh, that's not a big deal. But all of the guys who, I mean, Toto Wolff, I mean, here's the example. This is a guy who will put his elbows out and complain about everything. He was like, we broke the rules. They did the right thing. We needed to be disqualified. And you're like, oh, so everybody knows what happened. Is that sound about right? I mean, like, everyone knew how big of a breach this was of the rules, exactly what was the rule, and where did those two guys go wrong, and why didn't everybody get tested, I wondered.
Yeah. So, I mean, there are a lot of rules in Formula One and all forms of motor racing, but especially Formula One, and that some rules are more important than others. And ride height is right up there, I think, with one of the most important rules to follow, because the lower you can run the car, the more downforce you can create. So better grip. But if you get too close, if you run it too close to the ground, then lots of weird stuff starts happening with the aerodynamics. You can stall the car out. And that's what was causing the porpoising last year when Mercedes was, you know, bouncing up and down. And it can unweight the car. Like, you can pull like weight off the wheels. And so then it just gets dangerous, basically. So this rule about the ride height and the plank, the wear plank or the skid plate, was put into effect after Senna passed away in that one, the weekend in Imola in 1994.
It was 1994. Yeah.
There was another driver who I can't remember his name. I passed away in that same weekend.
The day before, yeah.
Yeah. And so they put this rule into place where, like, hey, you can't run the car lower than X. And the way they measure that is they secure a big, they call it a wood plate, but it's like a resin with like metal in it or something. It's not really wood.
Is that the reason we see it's some block that they call it, but like the titanium that's in that, is that the thing that creates all those sparks too?
There's mounting points like on the front and the back that are like titanium blocks, and those wear first. And that's what creates the sparks. And then once you wear through those blocks, then you start wearing the plank. And then the plank is like what they measure at the end of the race. So to your question of like, why didn't they measure everybody? It's this, like, Formula One has this really interesting thing where everyone kind of self-reports that they're following the rules. It's like,
they're the gentlemen of,
that's
of
right.
The racing
yeah. Like
world.
Everyone fills out their own scorecard. Right. But then at the end of the race, they do a few checks and they say it's random, but it's mostly like the people that they suspect might be cheating. And so I think they measured four cars. Two of them were Lewis and Charles, and they had worn just like, we're talking like 0.2 millimeter, which is like, it's crazy thin. Right.
But part of it was also because once they go into Parc Fermé after the sprint race, like they can't mess with the car. Go on and like, let's put a little bit of extra on here. We want to comply by the rules. They have to kind of guess for the entire weekend, right?
Yeah, they have 60 minutes on a sprint weekend in that first practice to make adjustments to their ride height and suspension and all that stuff. So they get to the racetrack with all sorts of simulation work that's been done, which was kind of what my job was in NASCAR. You do a bunch of sim work, you show up and you've got a starting point, and then you've got the practice time to improve it. Well, if you only have an hour, then you better get it right. Because the plank wears as you go throughout the weekend. So you have to bank all that you know you're going to wear a bunch. And so these guys, you know, Mercedes and Ferrari just got it a little bit wrong, and the rules are the rules. And that's one rule that like you can't really argue.
So they said it was based off of two. I was actually reading this thing where they said that the regulations and the people who check all the regulations, they see data and then they can go, we already know what we're looking at here. We know which cars to look at based off of the numbers that they're seeing already. I thought that is so wild to me. That is fascinating to see that they knew who they could check based off of those numbers.
Yeah. Yeah. Suspension travel is definitely something that they can measure on the cars, like the individual teams. I don't know how much of that telemetry gets fed to like the stewards or to the FIA. It sounds like there's some amount of it, but yeah, if you had ride height stuff, you could see, I mean, not only in the data, but visually I've seen photos that people have been posting on Twitter, of like the Mercedes, the Ferrari, and then the Max's Red Bull going through the same set of corners. And you can see the difference visually with the naked eye, how much higher Max's car was, than those guys. And, you know, it could have been just something as simple as like hitting the rumble strips too hard here or there. Like it's, it you know, is a really like sensitive thing. Back in when we went to Spa, there was, when Max was leading, GP got his, the race engineer kept telling Max to like quote unquote use his head going through the big Eau Rouge, the big uphill corner.
Yeah.
And the, what I read was that basically using his head was like, hey, you need to lift going through that point, or else if you go through too fast, you're going to wear your plank too much and then we're going to get penalized.
Interesting.
So he was kind of saying, telling Max to slow down at that point without really saying why over the radio. So this is something that they definitely have to manage. I think most especially on sprint weekends.
If it were up to me, this would be a full Yuki Tsunoda appreciation podcast for the little guy. I thought he had an amazing weekend among all the people, right? When you think about, I mean, McLaren is just continuing to impress. You see, like, I mean, Max has just been amazing, but everybody else has just been, it's been crazy to see how competitive everything is here. But yeah, I don't know. You tell me, Dan, the people who you thought performed really, really well. It might be on the rise here through the rest of this, or through the rest of the season here, as we have a handful of races left.
Yeah, I mean, Norris continues his momentum. You know, he held on to first through, I guess, through the first pit stop. Mm-hmm. I mean, and we got to give the shout out to Logan Sargeant. I mean, yeah, it took two other cars being disqualified for him to score a point, but like a point is a point. And he's the first American driver to score a point in 30 years since Michael Andretti. Like, this is a big deal for Americans in F1. I don't know if it's going to be enough to save his bacon when it comes to a new contract.
Right.
You know, I think if we don't hear about a contract extension before Las Vegas, then I think that the writing is on the wall. But it, you know, I think it can't hurt his cause that he was able to bank that point. And he was only, I think he ended up, I think, one place behind Albon. I think they finished 9th and 10th.
Right.
So his pace, pace was there relative to his teammate.
Yeah. And actually he only finished 1 second off of Albon over the entire race. But yeah, Yuki Tsunoda getting 5 points in 8th. Lance Stroll, like a quiet 7th place, was just kind of weird because his teammate Fernando Alonso did not finish. Sergio Perez gets Checo gets he got the, you know, the benefit. All these guys got the benefit of moving up you know, one spot in all of this. And so obviously Sainz getting onto the podium after everything, and Lando going up to second. That's a massive deal there. George Russell in 5th, Pierre Gasly 6th. Like I said, Lance Stroll, Yuki, Albon, and Sargeant. That rounded off the rest of your drivers there in the points. So as we look at it now, and as we get ready for the Mexican GP, because it's just they go right 1 week to the next, and then we just go right to it. This isn't. I mean, what happens this weekend? I did read that, and you did see a bunch of boos for. for Max when he's up on the top of the steps there. I think those were a lot of Checo fans who were right there in Texas, right? That were kind of showing their displeasure for the guy who, you know, is basically way outperforming not just everybody, but even their favorite driver. But I did read that you're going to see Verstappen has got a new set of body, or they gave him two bodyguards for the Mexico GP. And read into it what you will. I think that people just know that that's more of an indictment on Checo because of how badly Checo's been performing, because you don't get a bodyguard and hate on a guy so much. I mean, this dude is embarrassing his teammate in the same freaking car, and it's been wild to see this ride. And I know that Checo's, you know, sigh of relief when Lewis got that second place ripped from him because the points are at least a little bit further apart now, but – I mean, you could see him getting run down by the end of the year, and I just don't know if he's long for Red Bull.
Yeah, there's even the rumor that came out last week. I might have been out of the mouth of Helmut Marko that if Lewis finishes second in the standings, then, you know, Sergio loses his seat for next year. Ugh. So there's that kind of ultimatum hanging out there. But yeah, Mexico loves Sergio. I mean, I was just in Mexico this last week, and his face is all over every billboard, you know, lots of fans walking around in Red Bull gear. And I had to chuckle. I was in the Mexico City airport, and there was like a big sign advertisement on one of the walls. And it was a picture of Max and Sergio hugging in their like race suits. Like, and the saying in Spanish was like, the rivalry doesn't continue off the track or something. I don't know what the point of the whole message was, but it was like something thing. About
it's basically going, hey everybody, please do not plan any sort of violence against the world champion.
Because, honestly, that makes the most sense.
Like, you have to have a PR campaign of don't be mean.
Don't be mean to Max, please.
Don't be mean to Max, because like, it's not his fault that he's so dang good and that Checo is so far behind him. Like, who gets mad at a guy for maybe being, I mean, this could be the Michael Jordan of F1. I don't know if it's crazy to say that, but like, why not? We're watching one of the youngest dudes, and he's already a 3-time champion, and unless things get changed totally, like it seems like even if the cars are all equal, he's still going to beat everybody by a second. So you need like just some crazy advancement on the technological side from some of these other teams to be able to run down maybe the best racer in this generation. But at the same time, Dan, like the weird thing is why would you want Max to be in a bad car when you have that kind of talent? Right. I know it makes things a little bit closer, but like, man, it's crazy to watch this dude doing what he's doing. And I just have, at some point, I went from going, man, I'm kind of annoyed by Max, to, man, I guess just like we're watching some greatness happen and you have to admire it.
Yeah. I think he's raised the bar on what level of consistency is required to win a GP, right? It might be harder now than it has ever been to win a Formula One race. And, you know, he's stretching Lewis Hamilton, 7-time champion, to his absolute limit, to be able to compete. It's super impressive. And, the question in motorsports is always, is it the driver or the car? And it's both. But I think when you get to that top level, then the difference in the driver, I think, really starts to shine, and we see it.
I saw a pretty cool stat, too. They said that if Red Bull doesn't get a mechanical issue in the last 4 races of the year, it'll be the first team in this turbo hybrid era not to have had a mechanical issue in an entire F1 season. Like, you think about,
crazy.
I mean, you've had some DNFs with some crashes and things like that, but isn't it wild to think that this car that Red Bull has put together this year isn't just better than everybody? It also has zero flaws when it comes to breaking down. Now, knock on, Formica here in my studio, but like, I mean, that's good for the sport. Like, nobody wants to see a bunch of DNFs. When you saw engines blowing up a couple of years ago, it just felt like there was, when a team is in the lead in a race, and they lose because you see smoke coming out of the back of the car. Like, that's awful. You know what I mean? Like, there's no other version of that. And I guess I know that's part of the sport is, you can have a really good, really good racer, but you better get the car together. That's everybody's team. They're at the factory getting this thing together. And it was just, it's wild to think that could be the case, but that they haven't had a breakdown, an actual mechanical issue this entire season. It's already amazing to me now, but they could do it over the next 4 races and not have one mechanical DNF for the whole season. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah, I think talking law of averages, that's the one that seems the craziest to me. Like, we know Max's performance now, and he's likely going to keep it up through the last 4 races. But, man, if they go without a mechanical failure, that I think is incredibly impressive. So hats off to Red Bull for sure.
What's Mexico looking like this weekend? What type of a track is this? Because Max is a guy that there doesn't seem like there's any track that's a disadvantage for him. But with all these other teams that are making these strides, people bringing their last updates and seeing some of the fruits of those things, what are we seeing this weekend in Mexico? Who maybe makes a little bit more of a jump based off of what we saw maybe in the USGP? Or does that track totally differ from Mexico enough to not really matter, and you could see some other people making a name for themselves this weekend?
Yeah, Mexico is more of a low downforce or medium downforce track than Austin. Austin's very high downforce, but Mexico's got, I think, the longest straight in all of F1. That front stretch is like, I think it's a mile long. It might be. I'll double check my numbers. The whole track is how many kilometers? 4.3 kilometers. So the super long front stretch, super long DRS section in the first sector. So I think that then plays into, Red Bull's good everywhere, but I think Ferrari, McLaren probably not as much there. I think they do better at the high downforce stuff, but Ferrari probably Williams too. Williams is the other like notoriously really good at the low downforce stuff. So they're also bringing a softer tire this year than last year. So that'll throw things off a little bit, you know, just kind, you kind of have to throw the notes out from previous years when you have softer tires. So hopefully that means we've got a bit more of kind of diversity on the kind of pit strategy side of things, tire strategy. So should be an interesting race. I like Mexico. And I think whoever's got the fastest top speed will win.
It's cool because you have those grandstands right there at the start finish line, and they go through that crowd, and it just seems like it's a giant party. Mexico already has a really, really amazing party atmosphere. And when you have, you know, one of the top drivers in the sport, or at least, you know, one of the top drivers driving one of the top cars, I mean, you say what you will about Checo, but he is in that second position in F1, and he's the only other person. No, I guess it's not true now because we had Carlos Sainz get a W, but, you know, he had a couple wins under his belt. It seems like it was forever ago, and no one cares now about it, but he does, and he's, I mean, obviously, he's already the most important race car driver out of Mexico ever, and so that's a big deal. Let's jump over to another American story here, because we can't go a few minutes without talking more about ourselves, right? FIA President Mohammed Ben Sulayem is apparently now getting pressure from F1 teams that may not want to partner with the Andretti portion of a new Andretti Cadillac or Andretti GM, team effort that they're looking at. I'm not sure what is going on here, but if you're going to bring in an OEM, team from General Motors and have that Cadillac name on it, I guess you can kind of be picky about who the other partner is, but why not the name Andretti? What is going on? This is a name that is already familiar to F1. Why are people pushing back at this, or are they pushing back on just an American team overall, Dan?
That is like the big question. I'm racking my brain, and without more information, it's hard to not feel like it's just a protest against having an American team, because, you know, if they want to name their price, GM will pay it. Right. But it's just really strange that now they're saying, hey, we'll, you know, GM can come in, but we don't want it to be Andretti running the team side of things.
Right.
And maybe they think, like, you know, we let Haas in and Haas hasn't really done anything for us, you know? So we're just going to have Haas 2.0 with Andretti. And like, just for everyone to kind of know, like, the background there, like, Andretti's run a very successful IndyCar team for a long time, right? Like, that's where Mario made his name, was an IndyCar. Michael was a very successful IndyCar racer as well. And then he did a year, or I think a season in F1, didn't go super great. But like, they have the prowess of any group existing racing team in America right now. You know, Andretti's up there, so they know what they're talking about. And Michael Andretti also said that they this week are going to be testing a 2023 spec car in a wind tunnel in Germany. I think at a Toyota wind tunnel. So they've already started development. They're putting real dollars behind this, banking that they're going to be able to get into Formula One for 2025. So I do not know what the beef is between the F1 teams, who are the last ones to accept the new entrant, and the Andretti group. You know, the FIA has already approved it. Like, they're feeling good, but Formula One management, which you'd think with an American owner, of Formula One to the media rights, like, that they would be helping, you know, make this deal happen with Liberty Media, but it's very strange. In the end, I'm sure it all just comes down to money.
Oh yeah. In the end, we have this example across, you know, the world of NCAA football right here in the United States. We talk about it's a conference expansion always comes with this idea of, and it's funny because you'll have some people who go, absolutely, bring those brands in. We want to steal this brand from the Pac-12 or the, but at the same time, then you'll get like university presidents on some of these schools that are a little bit further down the line, and they go, I don't want to share any of that money. Or I don't want, like, this is not, this doesn't help us grow. Or you're kind of, I think about teams like, I mean, even Haas, would they be excited about a team that has an actual American car manufacturer backing a team? And they're this ragtag bunch of, like, out of North Carolina hiring, a bunch of, low cost, everything to try to be able to scoot by. Maybe the Haas family doesn't really love the idea of it either. Maybe some of these teams, I don't know. Christian Horner's like, no, you better get you got to get your own engine, which is rich coming from a team who their name is on an engine and they did not develop it. It was, you know, it was Honda, and it still is, and they went for years as Honda or Renault, you know, customers. And so, you know, having the standard of like, you need to come in with your own engine. Like, what are you talking about? This entire sport is like cheating off of each other with these engines. Half of the teams are using the other half of the teams as manufacturers. So it's a weird thing that as a person like me, who's new to the sport, I go, well, that seems strange, but it's also the standard. So I don't know why all the pushback, but I'm like hoping that this thing goes through. Cadillac Racing to me would just be a Cadillac F1 team would just be so cool to see in my lifetime. Yeah. And I'm hoping it does happen.
Yeah, me too. I think it's going to come together. I mean, there's even talk of like it going to the courts, like that they can't legally deny him or something. And I don't think anybody wants this to be,
hey, get Interpol on it. Let's get somebody out here. Let's get, what's his name?
Birds.
Yes. We got to get everybody on this thing. I don't know if we need to, you know, hire James Bond on this freaking thing. Let's go. Like, I don't know who you have to tell here, but how would it be worse having these teams in there? Come on.
Right. Yep. I think in the end, the F1 is, F1 management will name their price and GM will pay it and they'll be racing in a couple of years.
I love how some of these stories, there's an actual quote I got to read from both Toto Wolff and Christian Horner when it comes to, you know, an American team coming in and Mario Andretti and the Andretti name and everything. And Toto Wolff says, I don't know him. He has a fantastic track record. He's one of the great names of the sport, but I don't think we just give somebody a free pass to come into the sport. Okay. But here comes, and then my favorite quote is from Christian Horner. Look, there's no grudge. I haven't really met him, so I don't really have a personal grudge. And you're going, if you have to tell everybody that you're not, that you don't have a grudge against somebody, like then we all start really wondering about it.
Yeah, he protested too much. Yeah.
The reason you have a beef, and you can't say, I don't know him, so I don't have a beef with him. It's like, you don't know him, so you probably have a beef with him. And maybe it is just going to be about carving out a few extra dollars for each team to be able to spread across the sport, to be able to do it. But yeah, let's get it going. I'm all about it. Okay, as we get ready for this weekend, surprise performances, who are we going to see who's going to be having a weekend? You know, because, I mean, Yuki's coming off his best weekend of the year probably, right? Is there a version of that? Why aren't we seeing Danny Ric? Is it still him recovering from surgery on the broken hand? Or what are we talking about? Who's somebody who we're going to see a name maybe in that top 10 scoring points this weekend in Mexico?
Yeah, Danny Ric was having a decent race and he would have finished in the points after the two disqualifications. But yeah, he dropped there at the end and I got to look up what that was. It might have been just like tire drag and he had to pit late. But I think Sergio is going to lock in on home soil and shut up the haters and just go out and win this thing. Win this thing. It's
you think
a track
he's gonna win it?
I think I'm gonna call a Sergio
win.
Wow.
I love it. I don't hate it at all, man. Because when did he won the what? The two out of the first four races, and then we haven't seen anything from him since.
Yeah, yeah. I think that he's gonna lock in and it's time for him to this is almost kind of do or die. I mean, how far off is Lewis from Sergio now? He's got to lock in and have the race of his life, I think.
Okay. Here's my podium prediction. I'm going to go Lewis 1, Checo 2, Max 3. I have no idea why. I think just to be able to cause that stir, because if Lewis wins and Checo's second, like, it's just the awkwardness is going to be insane. Because I think people expect Max to win. I think at this point, too, like, I mean, I don't know. There's a lot that has to go on for Max to lose rather than, you know, a lot to have to happen for him to win. But we'll see. I don't know. And then my surprise player for this week is going to be Pierre Gasly. I think he's going to move up into either a third. I could see him stealing because I read this week about how this is a track that he really loves, and this actually works out pretty well for Alpine in terms of their setup. And so maybe he sneaks on and gets a podium if Max isn't 100% this next weekend, but we'll see. I think Lewis is going to end up getting his first win of the year at Mexico, And you're going to see some insane stuff going on at the finish there.
I like it. Yep. He's only 31, 39 points off of Sergio.
Yeah.
So, awkward. Yeah, he's coming. He's hunting.
All right. Well, let's see here. Any other thoughts, last thoughts on Mexico and how this thing works out for all these teams? Because we only have four races left, which I can't believe. And then, of course, Las Vegas is coming up in less than a month now as we cross our fingers to see if we'll be able to be there as media members.
Yeah. I've been surprised at how many teams continue to bring updates this late into the season. Last week, Aston Martin brought an entirely new floor, and they ran the new floor on Lance's car, and I think Alonso ran the old floor. And then, smattering of other updates from other teams. And, Red Bull has stopped bringing updates. And there was a question right in the post race where they asked, like, hey, you know, it seems like the gap is closing up. Is it because Red Bull's already started development on next year's car? And, you know, Max was like deer in the headlights, and Lewis and Lando just looked at each other, and they're like, that's exactly what's happening, is Red Bull's already working on next year's car, and everyone's still trying to bring updates right now, which I'm surprised by, but that's probably why the gap is closing up. So I think going into the last four races, if that trend continues, it might be pretty dead even by the end.
Well, we're looking forward to it. Another race this weekend, and we're going to give you the breakdown next week at this very time as well. Dan, thanks for breaking it down here for us, dude. You always bring the engineering side that I am always just scratching my head over. So I appreciate it, man. Thanks for always bringing those answers.
Yeah, my pleasure. And let's really hope for the mariachi rendition of the F1 theme. Oh. Before the race, because that's the best rendition.
How could they not bring it back? Everybody loved it so much last year. We got to do it. And then we'll play it next week when we come back to the show as well.
It's the best.
There you go. Dan Jimenez, Alex Keery, thanks for joining us right here. It is Mode Push. Download the podcast. Tell everybody else that you listen to a podcast about F1 and say, you got to listen to these guys because Dan's really smart. All right. We'll be back again next week, everybody. See you then.